Dear Bhante, venerable sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, and we'll start with the written questions. To start the session, I feel sorry because I got delayed a few minutes. Sorry for that. We'll invite Mr. Alarcon to present the written question.
Dear Reverend Sir, 3 days before in your sermon, you mentioned that if the primary object gets overshadowed by a secondary object, we can focus on the secondary object until the primary object. I focus on my breath as my primary object. Initially, after few breaths, I can feel the air touching the upper outer edge of my left nostril. My in-breaths are cooler than my out-breaths, and in-breaths are usually long and continuous process, while the out-breaths are few short bursts. After a while, I can feel the beat of my heart. Then there is a rhythmic throbbing sensation behind my right ear. Subsequently, this sensation will take precedence over my primary object. As you instructed on the other day, I took this as my secondary object and focused my attention on it. After some time, this sensation will reduce to a level where I can feel my breathing again, but with a couple of breaths. The same sensation will come into place. As this phenomena is a never-ending cycle in my sittings, yesterday evening I made a determination not to get disturbed by the secondary object. It worked until now. My breathing do not get overshadowed by the secondary object anymore. It has taken a sideline. Lately, I am feeling doubtful about my action. Have I done something wrong by wishing the secondary object to not to be prominent? Or do I need to take the secondary object as my primary? Or do I need to switch between them all the time? Venerable Sir, I humbly beg for your advice.
Sir, you can try all the possibilities. That means you can see the secondary object and primary object side by side. You can see the secondary object is prominent and close and the primary object is behind. Sometimes the primary object is forward and prominent, secondary object is behind. All these are valid combinations till you develop the confidence. So therefore, don't try to adjust anything. Just see, as far as you don't have enough confidence, enough foresight, you always take the refuge of the primary object. Whenever you develop the confidence, the foresight, you can let all the interplay between the primary object and the secondary object, but still your mindfulness is intact. So this is the way you diversify the mindfulness. So therefore it's a rule of thumb for the beginners: always try to keep the primary object in view with, that is to get rid of doubts. More and more you familiarize, more and more you become normalized, you will say which one may be prominent, primary object, secondary object. Whenever you get the confidence, when you get the self-contented, still you can say mindfulness is intact, and therefore you become independent of the primary object as well as the secondary objects. So they are objects become insignificant. Main thing is mindfulness. So therefore, these are some acrobats, some kind of development of the confidence. So therefore, as far as you have doubts, as far as your mind is entertaining doubts, take refuge of the primary object. Whenever mind is confident, whenever the mind is full of faith, let everything happen, but don't lose your continuity with the mindfulness. Then you can make the mindfulness independent of the object, and that is on the way. So therefore, please carry on. You will develop your confidence soon.
Venerable Bhante, my meditation experience seemed to be different from most of that have been reported. Although I pay my electricity bill every month on time, there's a smiley there to say that it is like in light away, and maybe there is no light or visions. There is no empty space either. I am firmly connected to the primary object, which is my breath. After a few breaths in sitting meditation, my breath calms down to very faint beat, barely perceptible. About an year ago, in sitting meditation, my breath started to move upward in several jerky movements, and it did not come down for some time. It terrified me. I started shaking in fear. But this incident also invigorated me. After this incident, I carried out normal household chores with much enthusiasm. This rejuvenated experience lasted for about a month before slowly fading away. After repeated occurrences of the same phenomena, that is, breath trying to leave me, I am no longer scared of that feeling, but getting used to it. When it comes like a wave. First the leg muscles are tightened, and then it moves to abdomen. Abdomen muscles are squeezed tightly, then the movement goes to the head, and I feel tightening, throbbing sensation in head. Then my head starts shaking. All this time, breath is moving up and not coming down. When it finally comes down, it comes down in a long breath. It looks like the body is getting accustomed to this new situation. The movements are getting progressively stronger and stronger. Sometimes head shakes fast. Any clarification of this phenomena and advice are very appreciated. Thank you.
So even the questions start with the light and other perception. The latter part is quite natural, indicate when and where the meditating mind or mindfulness associating with the object, what are the possible manners, that is called akara panyati. There are a lot of manners. First you see the shape, and when you continue to see chronologically, you see one gives rise to the other. There's no end to it. So therefore light is one facet, lightness is yet another facet, a vibration, a sound, and moving, wavy movements, everything represent that you are not dead, representing that you are not sleeping, representing that you are not unmindful. So therefore let every manner to take place. So when and where you let the manners to come without doubting, without hesitation, the manners will be fast and immediate, and it will become like a flux. So therefore first the shape and then the manner. When the manners mature, it's a natural characteristic. Everything is nothing but a flux. So that is the maximum you can go, that is the maximum immediacy or the proximity to the primary object. Everything appear like a cloud, everything appear like a flux. So if you, when you are maintaining, that generally indicate nothing is permanent. Everything is in a flux, and sometimes mind become giddy, mind become shaky, mind start to feel cold sweating, and all the kind of thing, because there's no pinpoint, there's no foundation, everything is a flux. So this more and more you become immediate, more and more you invite all the possible manners, that means you have to be very radical, let it happen. So when it happens one day, the mind also get mixed up with this flux, and till that mind appear separate, the flux appear like a separate phenomena. If you are brave enough, if you are radical enough, you can let go. Ultimately they hug each other. So ultimately mind also appear like no boundary, which me and not me boundary disappears. It's a kind of a adventurous thing. I would say you are rehearsing your death. You are fully with the full awareness, you are rehearsing the death, or you experience kind of a oceanic feeling, everything dissolve into everything without delimitation, without boundaries. So when it is happening, of course sweating happens, of course uncertainty happens, shaky, and go beyond control like. So therefore daily you have been training to this adventurous situation. Once that happens, that becomes day-to-day affair, that becomes second nature. Then onward only the real vipassana going to start. Then only you become a membership, you get the membership to the higher grade vipassana, or you are patipada, you get into the stream. and then you are just like on a conveyor belt, the product is processing. Till that you have to daily push yourself, daily strive yourself, daily season yourself to get hugged, get connected into the situation. So it is happening according to the Burmese system. First you see the shape and you see the manner, and then ultimately it is leading to the natural characteristics, that is to say the flux. And all you must brave through, go forward. Each time you go forward, your egotistic identification is losing. Your conceit is losing. Your desire is losing. But some kind of adventurous thing is happening. It is happening once, only once in your life. And it's unreversible. So, but repetitive application is confirming it. So therefore this letter is basically talking about the middle area, the manner. It is called Akara Panyati in Pali. You are learning different manners, and more you familiarize it, you may come more closer with the primary object. Ultimately, you will see the flux, and that is the end of the manner and the beginning of the natural characteristics.
Yeah, Venerable Bhante, yesterday I reported that I feel I was stuck in one point. In my breathing meditation. I believe yesterday evening I passed that point with some strange experience. I was watching breath in and breath out, fading away with time. Then I determined this is a defilement-free zone and I must stay here as long as I can. I was watching various colors, lights and patterns moving in a big wide screen. Suddenly, I found myself sitting in a lonely, quiet and peaceful place. I felt like I am in the heaven and I was very happy. I felt like I have everything I need and there was no worries. Once I was near a lake with beautiful sceneries, then I was in a place like a cave, limited space, but very peaceful and happy. A thought came to my mind suggesting that I am looking at a glimpse of Nibbana. Suddenly, I felt a little pain on my leg and tried to adjust my leg. Then the pain increased and my dream world collapsed. And I was again in this painful world. I readjusted in a comfortable posture, got ready for the next episode. Suddenly, my whole body was sunk in a tremendous happiness. I was so intense that I felt like a drug addict lying on a roadside laughing endlessly. This happened about 2 hours into the sitting meditation. Now I have a lot of questions. Am I on the wrong track? What was my mistake? Does Mara take me for a ride? I came to this retreat promising to stay away from sensual pleasures and to live a simple life. Now I am having sensual pleasures that I never had in my life. If there is a drug that will bring me to this state, of course I am ready to pay for it. Now I know why some people get addicted to meditation. It is better than ecstasy and free. I never wanted to be a drug addict. Please save me. I have a guilty feeling like I consumed a narcotics drug in the temple.
So the Buddha is the drug trafficker. Give a kind of addiction, you will never end unless you become Nibbana. So therefore he is a kind of charming person and you caught up, no end. Your whole appointment will be end up with a disappointment. Your whole egotistic idea will be smashed. Your whole egotistic plan and everything will be shattered, glass mansion like, no desire. So therefore the first, whenever the Siddhartha, the Prince Siddhartha, he went into this jhanic bliss in the seventh day, in the harvesting time or in the ploughing time, he went to this bliss. And then later he thought it is not done for a person like me, because it is such a inalienable, unalloyed kind of a feeling. You feel so much unpolluted, unalloyed kind of a feeling. Then later he decided to self-mortification. After the age 29 to 35, and last day, one before the day before the enlightenment, he remembered 6 days I was keep on torturing myself, the mortification, no truth. Then he remembered, as a very young prince, I entertained this kind of thing, and later I cut off from my will, thinking it is something wrong. So therefore he went to the other extreme. So he again consulted his young age and let that pleading to happen, let that ecstasy to happen, then enlightenment happened. Because this is of fear of unknown, the Buddha mentioned Laddha Mudha Nibbutim Bunjamana. He says this bliss we get free of charge. Whatever the thing you earn from the paying, visual objects, sounds, smell, taste, touch and all the kind of thing, it has a partial happiness. But what is happening within is inalienable, unalloyed. So you sometimes feel guilty. So that happened to the ascetic Siddhartha, that is written by Bhikkhu Soma Thero in his pathway to Anapanasati. He says he developed this fear, therefore he was taken to the self-mortification. But the last date, or one day before the enlightenment, he gave the balance approach, then the enlightenment can happen. So therefore, if you love someone, give this one. Because this is, no one can rob, and no one can get by compensating and barter system with the comparing others. One has to earn by itself. That's the bliss and the blessing the Buddha gave to his own son. Exactly the way, if you love someone, if you love yourself, this is the one you must understand. Then you will never chase behind this bloody partial the happiness. It is rotting. It is putrefied, but this one never. But whenever it is happening for the first time, you never believe such a contentment, such a the oceanic feeling, and ultimately, because you're still your wrong notion that you think this is your happiness and you think you earn. No, this is dhammata, this is the cause and effect relationship. Later you find it is not me, it is not mine, it is not myself. Whenever things get aligned, you are there. Whenever things get disaligned, disorganized, you are here back in this carnal body, then sweating, then all the problems. So it is a matter of alignment of the spiritual faculties and disintegration of the dismantling of this alignment. So you can understand two things. Whenever things get aligned, you are in the bliss. Whenever they are not in the alignment, you are back in this normal conventional truth. And your whole task must be how to understand how to bring this alignment back. That is what you call patipada, the procedure, the meditation. But always it is not get aligned. But anyway, nothing lost. Everything is there, but if things has to come in shape and come in the proper alignment, then this bliss is there. So each and every person has equal potential for this kind of a bliss. But no one at least know. That's why we are chasing behind this sense pleasure. That's why we are learning, practicing this one-upmanship, pushing someone-ness, exploiting someone in order to maximize the pleasure. Ultimately, you are accumulating so much of demerits. But this one is called Laddha Mudha Nibbutim Bunjamana. You earn it free of charge. So therefore, Dhamma relatives, we Dhamma brothers, and Dhamma family, we try to share this one. Whenever it is happening, it is unbelievable. So much so, you must practice. This must be your second nature. This must be, whenever it happens, you must feel at home. And we are being away from our home so much. So whenever we come to your blissful mind, Pabhasara Chittang, you feel like alienated. You are not feel... It is like my original nature, and therefore learn the art how to get disentangled and again dismantle and again get aligned. And that is how meditation happens. More and more you practice, more and more you season, you will understand these are two combinations, the conventional truth and the absolute. and you have the equal potential, each and everyone, but hardly someone realizes within the death, before the death. So therefore, it is nothing wrong. It is not. It is an addiction, yes, but it is free. And the Buddha gave two ways to clarify it. One thing is, when that is happening, lack of defilements. Second thing, it is not an accident. It is only happening by your repetitive application. Verify these two methods. Your stream of consciousness is less in defilement or defilement. The free state you can understand. And the second thing you can understand, it is something earned. It is not an accident. So therefore, by verifying that, you can proceed. Proceeding means that you familiarize it, master it, get seasoned to it, and you are the only person knows how to master it, how to season it, and you have to brainstorm, see all the possible ways to go again and again without any entertaining doubts, and that is the kind of faith you have to develop.
Venerable Bhante, this is more of an observation than a question. When I work sitting long hours in front of a computer, there is focus, no pain in legs, emits lots of noise, no distracted mind with eyes, ears, mind, all focused on the job at hand. Perhaps it is because of the monetary gain and necessity. Could you expand more on gain and necessity of meditation? Any carrot to entice this donkey to move forward? Thank you.
Well, this is a repetitive application, habit. The whole life is habit formation. Therefore, sankhara, the term sankhara is sometimes known as habituation, habit making. Whether you like it or not, you are in a habit. You are already addicted. Don't try to find fault with the drug addicted people. Don't find fault with the alcoholic people or womanizers, whatever may be. We also have our own addiction. That bloody fellow, they know their addiction. We fools, we don't know. We are always in addiction. So therefore, if you do meditate, difference between the computer work and the meditation is computer work, you have substantial gain. In meditation, you will gain nothing. No result oriented. As far as you meditate for the sake of meditation, very difficult to convince in that sense, that become very spiritual. And then you have already gained, and nothing to gain. You meditate for the sake of meditation. So therefore, when someone is asking, Bhante, how many hours I must meditate per day, it's a joke. That they are asking how many hours I must be unmindful. A whole day, as much as possible. And one question they are asking, from morning to evening, should I follow breath? The breath is happening, whether you like it or not. How many breaths happening under your light of mindfulness is what you call meditation. So therefore, any skill you have developed so far can be diverted to meditation. Nothing destructive. But only the thing is perspective. Only the adverting, only the avenue to the object, that is what we have to learn. So luckily the Buddha appointed something as it all, avenue to the breath, avenue to the rising and falling, or your left and the right. And then we may ask questions, but anyway, he was so compassionate, pinpointing, do this, do it repetitively. Ultimately, there's a Zen saying, telling, wherever you may be, you are on the way back home.
Can we keep the questions concise? Often essays are submitted! Exclamation mark and a smiley.
So we will run the show as it is. We will do editing later.
Dear Venerable Sir, I am happy to report that I have an object for my walking and sitting meditation. My object is heat specifically that radio. My object is heat, specifically that radiates from my hands. Since heat does not have a rising and falling like the breath, I focus on the ebb and flow of the changing temperature in the hands. For example, sometimes it is slightly warm and others hot and sweaty. Do you have any other ways to focus on a primary object that is heat related? Thank you for your insight.
So even if you are focusing on the heat, there should have two surfaces come together for to feel heat. If you feel warm, that means atmosphere right round or the object you touch must be cooler. Then only you feel the heat. Otherwise, there is nothing called absolute heat or absolute thermal power. It is always relative. So therefore, you have to understand whenever the contacts to happen, two surfaces, two things has to come together. And one part, subjective part, we call me. The other part we call not me. And therefore, whatever the experience we are going to do, under the nose you can go up to 50. Balance 50 is inferential. It is deduced knowledge. So that, but anyway, it is help promote you to understand heat also something like the stable thing versus moving thing. Hard thing against soft thing, smooth thing against rough thing, heavy thing against light thing. So likewise, there are 12 characteristics. This is how the world is working. These are called elementary characteristics. Earth element has three couplets. Heat element has the one couplet, heat and cold. Air element have the shaking and stability. Water element has the fluidity and cohesiveness. So now we try to understand heat manifest by interaction with two surfaces. Then we feel the heat cold, but the stage preparation is by the other three elements. Whenever you experience the heat, background screen is earth element, air element, water element. But the heat is more prominent. Heat is the main actor in the scenery. So you see it. It's also have me and not me part. So look at this dimension into that. Then ultimately it will go into the totality of all the four elements. That means whether you have taken the left leg, right leg, in breath and out breath, heat and rising and falling, whatever may be. Observing the four character, four elements also, yet another valid way of looking at your body. So different people approach from different sides, never mind. Please add these things and be more vigilant, more diligent to the heat, then it will be leading.
I can observe the characteristics of fire element, wind and earth. I don't know how to observe the stickiness of water element. Could you explain how to do it? Afterwards, the next step. I missed your explanations. Number two, if I stare at something intensively, then the color disappears, starting from the surrounding area. Then the center also loses its color. The objects also start to disappear. I wonder what is going on. Until a few years ago, when I played the same game, only the center became more vivid and surrounded by a bright ring. But color did not disappear. The surrounding area faded away. I can do this since childhood. Why the difference? Thank you very much.
So whenever you are observing chronologically one particular thing, it's changing. Changing the shape, changing the manner, and ultimately come to the natural characteristic. And the second part when you are reading, you see, whenever you see something and continue to see, you see it is fading off. That is why you are divorcing your wife. You see very attractive at the marriage, but after the marriage, you are the very person asking divorce. If you can change the wife, then it can go just like in Hollywood. And that is the worst human being started marrying to a particular lady. It's a torture. I am unmarried. I can look at each and every lady as a new one, as very attractive. I can live very happily. I am a registered bachelor. When you married only, all the problems. So the Buddha says that they have to take one object and see how fast it is changing its colors and the shape and the manners. And then later you have to understand if this is so, others also so. So it's very, very, revealing thing, but our rational mind make doubts out of that, fear out of that, uncertainty out of that, because it is looking from the permanent notion. As far as you are looking through the permanent notion, every change appears like a threat to your ego, threat to your conceit, threat to your desire. But the Buddha giving us a different magnifying glass and see through this, this is the impermanent notion. Then you will not have so much of future projections, so much of liking for the lion's share and the big share, and so much of thinking about my ego without death, without old age, without sickness. So this is one healthy way, outlook the Buddha is proposing. So therefore these things are happening is in everyone's eye, but no one express it unless we people get together and try to share our experience as yogis. Then we find these common features, that is the way the symptom, the explicit nature of the impermanent nature is clicked to different people in different ways. But the impermanent notion, the impermanence nature is worldwide. Different people click into that or get implicit differently. So when we are talking each other, we can see it's you can't hide it. You can't do away with that. Instead, take it prominent, talk about that, and then that becomes the living Dhamma or living phenomena. And then it is nothing wrong with our perspective, nothing wrong with our view. We are adding a new perspective to it, looking through the mirror of impermanence. Then these are positive things. Nothing to worry. Let that happen again and again, but only take the stand of impermanent notion. Then you are fast advancing.
Dear Bhante, could you give us some tips to understand and overcome boredom, frustration, confusion? While in a retreat, boredom and frustration happen, especially when there is not much improvement, stagnation in meditation. Confusion happens when mind does not know what to do next in meditation with metta.
But the Buddha says the boredom and the monotony happen when you are advancing, when you are progressing. But your rational mind says whenever the boredom happens, you feel you are stagnated, reason to be entertain doubts and fearfulness and uncertainty. So these are the perspective you have to change. So our Lokahamthro Venerable Jnanarama used to say, if you go prepared for this boredom, boredom is no more boredom. If you go prepared for this monotony, whenever it is happening, you feel thrilled. You see, okay, now my meditation is progressing, my desire is reducing. If the desire is increasing, enthusiasm can happen. When the desire is reducing, when it is fading off, the boredom can happen. That's what the Buddha is directing us. So if you are hating your results, then you are contradicting, self-contradictory. So this preparedness is a nuance of the diligence or mindfulness. So I find the relationship between the Baden-Powell, Sir Baden-Powell, started the Boy Scout and Girl Guides, he started first, be prepared. And the Buddha, be diligent. Both of them have the equal nuance. So therefore, full-time meditators, bhikkhus and nuns, and they are the people, be prepared. And Girl Guides and Boy Scouts, they also leave their houses, go to the forest and put up a camp and a jamboree and do impromptu adjustments and make it as adventurous. So these two lines I find parallelism. So therefore, simple answer for this boredom is be prepared. Whenever meditation is progressing, specifically the vipassana, boredom is a very good sign. But if it's a bad omen or good omen, depending on your perspective. So we get together here for this transition, not to consider it as a bad thing, but to consider it as a good omen and be prepared, then it is no more boring, no more monotonous, because you consider it as positive sign.
Dear Venerable Sir, in my walking meditation, I was contemplating on the movements of my feet for some time, and with the sensations experienced by walking on the very cool wood floor changed my focus. Now I started to contemplate on feelings. Early in the morning, the coolness on the floor was not very pleasant. I was over and over thinking, dukkha vedana, dukkha vedana, unpleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling. Then at noon when I was walking on the same floor, it gave me a very pleasant feeling. I repeated in my mind, sukha vedana, pleasant feeling. Suddenly it occurred to me how the temperature at different times of the day, or how different conditions can produce different reactions in the mind and body. Then I was also thinking of perception, volitions, or consciousness associated with it, namely jnana rupa or nama rupa or mental materiality. Is it okay to think of feeling and the associated concepts while practicing walking meditation, or does it have to be limited to left and right movements and other variations such as lifting, moving, and placing? Please explain with your extremely wise advice with due appreciation.
So that the general answer is, keep the direct touch, the leading power, and let the theoretical understanding, deductive knowledge, rationalization, naivipassana, that's a Pali term, behind. So much so you are healthy, so much so it is advancing. Whenever the direct touch becomes secondary and the contemplation, deductive knowledge, theoretization, philosophizing going to start, leading mad. So therefore, it is often fighting each other. So your simple, humble attitude must be to keep the practice, keep the pachakka, keep the personal experience first. But the theoretical understanding, deductive knowledge is very lucrative. Sometimes overpower, and ultimately you are daydreaming. More than you are meditating and experiencing, deductive thinking happen. So Mahasi Sayadaw is answering this question. He says both of them are insight. Theoretical understanding or deductive knowledge and direct touch, both of them are come under the category of insight. But which one is leading indicate whether you are pragmatic or not. Philosophy means you keep the theoretical understanding first and no or less direct touch. Then you can be a good prolific writer and all the kind of, but you are not helping yourself. But when you are keeping the direct touch, the pachakka jnana first, other will come the suit, your theory knowledge. So therefore ultimately you feel thrills and frills through your theoretical interpretation, but don't miss the, don't get mixed up, but keep the practical first is the key for this understanding. And while reading, what I thought was, it came to my mind was, the very wood upon which you are walking has no intention to give a pleasure or pain. Wood is wood. You are the person walking in the cool time, the cool wood appear like a torture. In the warm time, would appear like a blessing. And if you say that bloody wood is going to give me the pleasure and the pain, you are the bloody fool, not the wood. Very nicely it is being put into literature. It says when the Tibetan people living in the very cool climate, and when they write their religious scriptures, they say if you do good meritorial deeds, you will go to the heaven which is very warm. But the Arabic people living in very very heated desert climate, they say, if you are obedient to the God, you will tend to the heaven. That is very cool. So if the Arabic go to the Tibet, it's a heaven. And the Arabic goes to the Tibet desert, they are heaven. They are fighting each other. Heavenly beings are fighting each other. We are such a fool lot, attribution changing. And we find some scare god and find something to attribute the happiness and the suffering, the never understanding the magic of the mind. When you are meditating, all of a sudden you feel like laughing. You can't stop. you feel it is revealing and you feel like a child. And again, you are to the universal knowledge and the cosmic knowledge. In presence of the Buddha, we are less than a child. When it is revealing, it's not limited to time and not limited to the space. More you be in the here and now, it's like a university. So much of knowledge, so let the mind to be here and now, everything will be revealing. The wood, the flow, is not intended to give the pleasure and pain. You are the very person. And if you know it is happening, it's a kind of a intrinsic kind of a pleasure, kind of a contentment happen. And you can live without food. So much of pleasure in each and every encounter. That means it is within yourself. That is what we call insight.
Second part of that question. In sitting meditation, after observing breath without interruptions, I come to a special stage which is nearly blissful. It is like entering a different world. I assume this is ekagrata, stage of concentrated mind, in samatha or in insight meditation. It's the same feeling. But an exception is there. That is the realization that during this stage, there is no anger, desires, agitation, restlessness, doubt or sleepiness, five hindrances. I feel like in that moment, even if someone slaps me across my face, I can still maintain my calmness. It's a very peaceful, blissful feeling. Are those feelings under both circumstances same or different? Please explain in your vast Dhamma knowledge with deep appreciation. Please explain with your Dhamma knowledge what are the similarities and differences occurring under these circumstances with your deep Dhamma knowledge.
I find that he or she is trying to see which is samatha experience or vipassana experience. That is the rational mind always adds sour taste to this such a sweet thing. Don't put a label. Whenever you put a label, it is beautified. It is ruined. Everything on the earth is contaminated with the name. So much so it is defiled. Buddha says everything in the world infested with the name. Anything you label is secondhand, never original. So when the meditation is going to give us something new, new areas, unknown, this is the way of rejuvenation, this is the way of be with that. But our bloody mind, bloody rational mind, always seeking a label to fix it. It's putting some defilement. So they have keep it as it is. That is how the children, up to the age 6, before they learn language, everything appear green, everything appear new. So therefore, when we feel tired and tense, look at the child. Your attention release, go on. But they are not labeling something. They are in it. So therefore, that let it be. Put a no name. Something like no pleasure, no pain, is something called pain and pleasure. You put the two together and put that label, and it is grey. So we have a kind of a fear, we have a kind of uncertainty, a kind of doubtfulness for that kind. And the worst thing is, we think that is what you call the knowledge. We think that is what you call the inquiring mind. No, bullshit. The inquiring mind is something different. You keep open and you don't label it. But that disguise, the inquiring, the doubt disguise in terms of the inquiring mind and try to find a suitable label, soon that it becomes second hand. So therefore, let be fresh hand. So first hand, fresh. Don't try to label it. Just imbibe, just go into it. It says the frog jump into the old pond, plop, that's it. Don't say the methods and the labels and kind of frog jump into the old pond, plop. It's experience. Oh, keep on that. That is what I call girl guides and the scouting, boy scouting. Go for exploration without labeling it. Then you are ever rejuvenating, ever fresh to the next moment what is happening.
Venerable sir, is it possible for you to give the summary of the sutta in one Sinhala Dhamma talk during one of these days? Teruvan Saranai.
So you can read this thing, and we have given the handout, and read it to a voice record and listen to it. My way is very, very detailed. Everyone is find fault with me. I am giving so much of talks. There is no end to it. And every day I am talking the same thing. Whatever the sutta I am taking, every day I am talking the same. So those who are accustomed to my thing, and even the halakon is finding fault with me, because each and every sutta I have given sermons. And he says, Bhante, how can I cope up with? Daily you are talking about 3 hours, 4 hours, and each and everyone happy like a fresh, but I am talking the same thing. So some people ask summary, some people ask more expansion, but Dhammajiva is Dhammajiva. The Sutra Sutra, of course, we are in Sri Lanka. We have given now about 20 retreats, taking one after the other. And so much of series in Sinhala, if you are listening. But last Florida talk was on Da Sutra Sutra, book of one. Now this is will be the book of two. So I doubt whether I have separate time for summarizing it. So please go through this thing and make it yourself and get the formal translation and then try to cope up with.
Is it in the different website?
Yeah. And dhamsara.org or nisanwane.lk. These websites have the Sinhalese talks. But I don't know. The person who is asking can listen to Sinhala or not.
Dear Venerable Sir, could you please explain more about clear comprehension, especially in regard to appreciation, which you mentioned in one of your earlier talks? I seem to keep going into some automatic pilot mode where I am watching, but I feel nothing. I think what's lacking is sampajanna and the sense of appreciation with much metta.
So I will repeat the same thing. When you go to autopiloting, or when you go to something new, when you go to something unknown, please see whether your stream of consciousness is with less defilements, and see whether it's something achieved through your meditation. If it's something accidental, or if you find mind is full of defilements, then you have to verify it is not something good. The verification or clear comprehension is each and every step you go forward, by each and every step you understand the less and less defilements relatively. And the other thing is, it's technically you are earning it day by day. That means you are comprehending, you are aware, it is not an accident. It is the way the Buddha explained, and I have dedicated that into myself, and that is how it is happening. So then and there, justification or verification or reification is the one going to give the confidence. Even if you achieved and if you are not verifying, it won't give you any confidence. Then it is something like a blind person hit on the way to a gym or something, jewelry, it can't understand. It may find fault with telling some heavy thing came and hit my leg, and he may find fault with the stone, but he never going to pick it up because he can't verify, he can't understand what is happening. So likewise, it's a dream of a blind person, those who have no clear comprehension. Person with the clear comprehension is person with eyes and values. So whenever it's something hit, he can understand it's a piece of gem or jewelry or something like that. That is the difference.
Dear Venerable Sir, I am having some problems with observing my breath. I understand there is a fine line between observing breath and controlling it. During sitting meditation, I often get confused because I don't know whether I am controlling my breath or just observing it. Sometimes my breath was shallow, and after a while I had to take a deep breath. At that time, I know almost for sure I was exerting control. Other times my breath was even, but I felt my body was swaying with the rhythm of my breath. When that happened, I was not sure whether I was using body movement to control breath. Could you advise on how to tell the difference between controlling breath and observing it? Are there any specific techniques that I can use to avoid controlling my breath? Thank you.
So the breath-wise, we leave it and take thoughts. Whenever you are caught up in daydreaming, thinking, wondering, see whether you are thinking actively or thinking happen passively. There is no border. And if you understand the thinker, thought with the thinker and thought without the thinker, you will see how absurd so much of percentage thought without a thinker. But if you're supposed to think bad thing, you worry thinking, ha, I thought something wrong. But that is, you are not the doer. You are not willfully or volitionally doing it. But what is happening, you consider as me, mine and myself. And whatever you thought consciously, of course you have to take the consequences. But if you see the proportion, how much you, the thought without the thinker and how much thought with thinker, it's amazing. Exactly the way the day-to-day chores you are doing, how much you do volitionally, or how much it is happening in a habitual way, we are such a robots. We don't understand. Even in breathing, if you have intention to involve, intention to do forced breathing, you are wrong. Unintentionally it is happening, simple thing is disclaimer. Simple thing is not disavow. If it is happening, forced breathing or not, if you as far as you don't have volition, nothing to worry. Buddha says, Chetanam Bhikkhave Kammang Vadami. If you have any volition and will, then you are answerable. You are committed. Otherwise, accept it as it is. Don't worry. Main thing is not to worry, but to before proclaiming not to worry, you must understand it is not a volitional. Of course, it is forced breathing. But never mind, as far as you know. So this is the way the clear comprehension come into being. The very thing happened through you, but maybe due to habits, due to your conditioning, you have no any will. You have no volition, then you can just apologize, telling, I'm sorry, damage happened, but it is not volitional. Whatever the punishment, I am ready to take. So here also, we are masters to worry. Our main task, our human right, we consider to worry on everything. So the government knows how to make you worried. The media knows how to make you worried. Advertisements knows how to make you worried. Politicians knows, economists, they know. And the socialists and people, they know. You are the poor victim because you don't have mindfulness. And you don't have the clear comprehension, so you become a prey. And bloody you people also create problem to the others, thinking I must control my children. Or teachers think I must control my disciples. And doctors think I must control my patients. Kings think I must control my subject. But bloody kings have no control. Even to the kings, they don't have control. And the parents, they don't have control. So therefore, just look at, let everything happen passive. But even forced breathing and involuntary thing can happen, disavow. Disclaim, yes, it is forced breathing. Never mind, I see the heat, cold, stiffness, tension, movements. That's it. But don't make a vow to force volitionally breathe. And then apply it to your talk. Apply it to your day-to-day activities. And see interaction with the climate and everything. How much happening. This is Taoism, that is natural unfolding. How much you do and see the proportion of worries you are taking or simply something happening. Feel very sorry. The people, how much they are taking pain, taking worries, and if they can discriminate, this is I have done, of course I must be punished. But if something happened to me, even they are punishing, I am not feel guilty. So this is the blessing for the Vipassana yogis the Buddha give us. This endowment before the enlightenment. So you can be happy, you can be a free bird, see things and take the responsibility for what is you have committed, not otherwise. How many more questions? We have already gone, of course I came today 10 minutes late. Long questions. So what do you think that, shall we proceed or?
This one?
Okay.
Respectable Bhante, thank you for your talk on like and dislike this morning. Following your talk, I have a question applying that concept into meditation. I consider a calm, absorptive sitting meditation as a likable one. A meditation with killing, aching, leg pains as a dislike one. How can we keep mind open to likable and dislikable sitting? Likeable and dislikable sitting meditation. Isn't the purpose of intensive retreat trying to turn meditations into more likeable? Example, calming, soothing ones, less dislikeable ones. Thank you.
No, there is no such a promise. We are to see things as they are. As much as dislike is there, liking is there. As much liking is there, dislike is there, because they are reciprocal each other. They are married couple, always live together. We only ask the like and hate dislike, so we are making turmoil. So therefore, intensive retreat is to understand things they are, not for the pleasure principle, not to add more to the manapa or likings. So therefore, choiceless awareness is preparing your mindset to see the little bit of uncomfortable feeling and little bit of desirable feeling, but not to get distracted, but to be with your simple mindfulness with the primary object. Again and again, ultimately you will see this, the capacity, the immunity, the bearability increasing. It's happening very slowly. So start somewhere, and this is the philosophical way, this is theoretical way you are understanding. Once the mind gets prepared, it will learn the art, find the ways and means, and slowly, slowly increasing. Therefore, please define the intensive retreat is not to gain more pleasure. Never. Okay. So we are postponing some questions and going to sum up the question and answers. And we are having about 45 minutes for walking meditation. And after that, we will be gathering here for another group sitting. With that announcement, the question and answer session will be coming to the end. Thank you very much for the participation. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.